The Ascent of Mount Carmel by St. John of the Cross, Book 3, Chapter 14, which treats of spiritual knowledge in so far as it may concern the memory. We class spiritual forms of knowledge as the third division of the apprehensions of the memory, not because they belong to the bodily sense of the fancy, as do others, for they have no bodily form and image, but because they are likewise apprehensible by spiritual memory and reminiscence. Now, after the soul has had experience of one of these apprehensions, it can recall it whensoever it will. And this is not by the effigy and image that the apprehension has left in the bodily sense. For since this is of bodily form, as we say, it has no capacity for spiritual forms. But because it recalls it intellectually, by means of that form which it has left impressed on the soul, which is likewise a formal or spiritual form or notion or image, whereby it is recalled, or by means of the effect that it has wrought. It is for this reason that I place these apprehensions among those of the memory, although they belong not to the apprehensions of the fancies. Fancy. What these kinds of knowledge are, and how the soul is to conduct itself with respect to them, in order to attain to union with God, are sufficiently described in the 24th chapter of the second book, where we treated this knowledge as apprehensions of the understanding. Let this be referred to, for we there described how it was of two kinds, either uncreated or of the creatures. I speak now only of things relating to my present purpose, namely, how the memory must behave with respect to them in order to attain to union. And I say, as I have just said of formal knowledge in the preceding chapter, for this being of created things is of the same kind, that these apprehensions may be recalled when they produce good effects, not that they may be dwelt upon, but that they may quicken the soul's love and knowledge of God. But unless the recollection of them produces good effects, let the memory never give them even passing attention. With regard to uncreated knowledge, I say that the soul should try to recall it as often as possible, for it will produce most beneficial effects. As we said above, it produces touches and impressions of union with God, which is the aim towards which we are directing the soul. And by no form, image, or figure which can be impressed upon the soul does the memory recall these, for these touches and impressions of union with the Creator have no form, but only by the effects which they have produced upon the soul of light, love, joy, and spiritual renewal, and so forth, some of which are wrought anew in the soul whensoever they are remembered. Chapter 15, which sets down the general method whereby the spiritual person must govern himself with respect to this sense. In order to conclude this discussion on the memory, it will be well at this point to give the reader, spiritual reader, an account of the method which he must observe, and which is of universal application, in order that he may be united with God according to this sense. For although what has been said makes the subject quite clear, it will nevertheless be more easily apprehended if we summarize it here. To this end, it must be remembered that since our aim is the union of the soul with God in hope according to the memory, and since that which is hoped for is that which is not possessed, and since the less we possess of other things, the greater scope and the greater capacity we have for hoping, and consequently the greater hope, therefore, the more things we possess, the less scope and capacity is there for hoping, and consequently the less hope we have. Hence, the more the soul dispossesses the memory of forms and things which may be recalled by it, which are not God, the more it will set its memory upon God, and the emptier will its memory become, so that it may hope for him who shall fill it. What must be done, then, that the soul may live in the perfect and pure hope of God, is that whenever these distinct images, forms, and ideas come to it, it must not rest in them, but must turn immediately to God, voiding the memory of them entirely, with loving affection. It must neither think of these things, nor consider them, beyond the degree which is necessary for the understanding and performing of its obligations, if they have any concern with these. And this it must do without setting any affection or inclination upon them, so that they may produce no effects in the soul. And thus a man must not fail to think and recall that which he ought to know and do, for provided he preserves no affection or attachments, this will do him no harm. For this matter, the lines of the mount, which are in the 13th chapter of the first book, will be of profit. But here it must be borne in mind that this doctrine of ours does not agree, nor do we desire that it should agree, with the doctrine of those pestilent men who, inspired by satanic pride and envy, have desired to remove from the eyes of the faithful the holy and necessary use and the worthy adoration of images of God and the saints. This teaching of ours is very different from that, for we do not say here, as they do, that images should not exist and should not be adored. We simply explain the difference between images and God. We exhort men to pass beyond that which is superficial, that they may not be hindered from attaining to the living truth beneath it, and to make no more account of the former than suffices for attainment to the spiritual. For means are good and necessary to an end, and images are means which serve to remind us of God and of the saints. But when we consider and attend to the means more than is necessary for treating them as such, they disturb and hinder us as much in their own way as any different thing. The more so when we treat of supernatural visions and images, to which I am specially referring, and with respect to which arise many deceptions and perils. For with respect to the remembrance and adoration and esteem of images which the Catholic Church sets before us, there can be no deception or peril, because nothing is esteemed therein other than that which is represented. Nor does the remembrance of them fail to profit the soul, since they are not preserved in the memory save with love for that which they represent. And provided the soul pays no more heed to them than is necessary for this purpose, they will ever assist it to union with God, allowing the soul to soar upwards, when God grants it that favor, from the superficial image to the living God, forgetting every creature and everything that belongs to creatures. End of chapter 15.